Hi, good evening, world. This is Wesley Pepper speaking, and this is my podcast, Mr. Pepper's Art Lexia. This is my fifth episode, and thank you to all the new listeners for tuning in. Thank you. This evening, I'm talking to a really cool artist. I'm talking to Matete Mosaledi, all the way from Grill in Mpumalanga. Now, this brother's got a very interesting... His medium is writing. He's also a very cool musician. But he's got a very interesting process in how he packages his music and how he deals with his art, because he still works a 9-to-5. And we'll be unpacking how he's been coping with the ongoing pandemic, how he's been... his new projects, and more importantly, his processes... how he balances his 9-to-5 with being an artist, because as we know, that's not an easy thing. So thank you for tuning in. Just before we continue with the interview with Matete, I'd just like to take some time out to take just to pay my respect to a fallen brother, George Togara from Harare in Zimbabwe. So I met the brother last year through on social media, but it was through art networks, and we spoke enough in the beginning for me to know that I really want to work with this brother. And we sort of informally started something, and before the pandemic hit, but even before that, he kind of backtracked. And in hindsight, it looks like it was because of his condition. But he made a hell of an impression on me. He was a complete soldier. I mean, like this, he was everything that I loved about the arts, man. He believed in black people, in black creativity, in everything I love, man, everything I want to speak on. In fact, I was lining up interviews to speak to him, but in hindsight, I can see now why he didn't respond. And rest in peace, my brother. You certainly made an impact on me, and it's with a heavy heart that I should say this, but rest in peace, my brother. So we had a bit of a technical glitch regarding the interview, and the first few minutes of Matete's answer didn't exactly come through. So I'll just basically summarize. So I asked him to explain himself and his art. And Matete Mosaledi is from Krill in Mpumalanga. He's based and he works there. But he's very much an active member in the Johannesburg, Pretoria art scene. So he was just explaining how he got into touch with the arts through Vangile's No Camps, but I forgot the name. Those sessions she used to host at the Union Gardens in PTA, and how I eventually met him through some of my circles or networks. And he's a Sepedi writer. So we spoke about how there's 4 million people speaking the language, and how he sort of sees himself as part of that cultural landscape, and how he exercises the expression. So he's a musician, and I start off with a poet, and then he puts music to his poetry, and he has also got quite an interesting voice as well. He's also taken part in a whole host of literary and poetry festivals. I know he was in Poetry Africa last year, and there's a few others. So that was basically what we were talking about, and we'll pick up the interview where we get into his processes. In other words, how he makes his work, and then the interview will take from there. So I derive my inspiration from my surroundings and what I'm listening to, what I'm seeing, etc. And then the art comes naturally. So yeah, man, explain to me your processes, bro.
Yeah, basically, we derive from the same source. We are basically taking the world in. We are observing. We are experiencing, and we have the fortunate, or sometimes even unfortunate, ability and to different levels of trying to express exactly what we are taking in. So I observe, I spend a lot of time alone as well to digest, you know, what I see. And and then sometimes I have a perspective, sometimes I don't, but I don't feel I always need to have a perspective. So sometimes I'm just an observer, and my job is just to tell what I see. So that's where I derive my inspiration. But I've learned over time, I've not been to any formal art school, any academic art school. I don't have any art training whatsoever.
Yeah.
So what I do is what I've learned, what I've picked up as I grew up, what I've developed over time. But I developed that over because of observation. So I started mimicking at some point, and then, you know, started incorporating a bit of myself and more as I got over time, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, eventually then I started doing it consciously to say, this is how I think I want to sound. This is how I want people to experience what I'm trying to communicate. And that took time.
It
It has traces of different things. That's why for me it is also I was also able to then incorporate other mediums into what I do because of those influences as well. So for different things, but I try and find a link in those things. You know, the reason why they make sense is, for example, what you write is actually a picture in your head. It's actually a visual image first.
Yeah.
And then you take that and put it in words on a page, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, do we really look at it like that, that you formulate a picture first? So you have to be a visual orientated person that is then able to translate images into words, you know?
Yeah.
So that is the link, if I may put it like that.
Yeah.
So that's my process is that I draw inspiration from other art forms. Excuse me. So I play a whole range of music. For example, I just play anything that I find. I play. If I like it, I keep it. You know. So in my playlist, there's a whole lot. Everything. You know, for me, good music is what sounds good to me. Yeah,
sure. Yeah. We'll get into those details like a bit later. So, because you know what is fascinating? Like I'm listening to you. It's like you're talking from I guess I'm defining it as like a pure sort of background, because my process is littered with capitalism. So I have to think aggressively, I have to think smoothly, I think lovely. Like even like this past week, my man, like I was basically three different people the entire week. And then I've got to be a human being. And like, you know, so I'm at home and there's a family situation, so I've got to, there's different personalities, and I've got to be like we'll get into how the whole family thing a bit later, and how you balance that, because like you still work a 9-to-5, no?
Yeah, man. I was coming to that.
Explain like where does like it's time, man. Like time, where is the time?
Yeah, you notice that when in your introduction, when you mentioned where I'm based, you laughed a bit.
Yeah. I'll tell you why, but maybe not now. Because there's a specific reason why. Now I'll tell you why, just to make that sense, right? Because when I met you that time, I thought you like some cat that lived here, maybe Rosebank, I don't know, somewhere there in the north, right? And you gotta drive.
Yeah.
You gotta drive like almost 2 hours home.
And I'm like a Kasi boy.
And like one day we finish, and this is
So for the people that's conservative, close your ears now, but we drank a lot of booze driving from Kimberley's to go.
Yeah,
that's almost 500 kilometers. And when we got there,
man,
I realized, like, hey, this bro still got 2 hours more.
Yeah, and I'm tired. I'm dead.
Yo, like that, you know, thinking of it, like, I was like, yo, like.
Three provinces, bro.
Yeah. And like, I think the level of commitment is next level, but I sort of want to get to the level of commitment when we come to the I don't know what's the right word, but like, how do you balance it? Because there's yeah. fun, and like, even that time you were working and you were here for a gig, and just to clear that to everybody, we were doing a festival here, the Northern Cape, 2015, and Matete had to drive all the way from Kriel to Kimberley in his car, so that's about 7 hours drive, and long story, we all drove back with him, so that's 14 hours of drive, at least half of that was covered with at least a three. Sure, sorry, my max is off here, but like a large part of it was with people going back, but like the thing is, so you would take time out from work, the gig didn't work out, and time is money, and there's stress attached to that, so let's talk about that, let's talk about that.
That was a messed up experience.
Yeah, it was heavy. I remember it well. It was heavy, but we'll get to the fun part now. I think as creative people, like we have and I'm trying to find this out, like a technical word for, but I mean, for now, just I'm gonna call it ability. We have ability to process everything. And somehow we process things and we still get to make art and we still get to have a family and like be quote unquote normal in society. And I think it's only creative people that can do that. So what I want to do with this podcast is sort of, for lack of a better word, examine or explore all of it. And, you know, in the long term, who knows what we can do with that information. But for now,
yeah.
So I've created the, you know what we're talking about. So explain to me, how did you manage, bro?
Man, it's a process that developed over time, but
it was not
planned, you know. I started, you know, the 9-to-5 first before I did the performing, you know. I used to just write and keep and submit writings to journals, to other publications.
Yeah.
But I was not looking at the performance part of it. That came later because of, you know, being exposed, or there was a poetry session in my street, you know. Mm-hmm. So I would attend every second week I was there. And that's when I got there. I started performing, and then that is when then I, you know, tried to now incorporate that, because it needed time, because those poetry sessions died, right?
Yeah.
That the event that you mentioned in Midrand, where I said I met Vangi for the first time. Vangi was running sessions in Pretoria, né?
Yeah, I remember. Yes, I remember those.
I used to go, it used to be monthly, if I remember very well. I used to drive from here to Pretoria every month just to attend those sessions at the grounds at Union Buildings. And during those times, at that session, I would meet a lot of people that are still now in poetry in South Africa. Some performers that are very frequent on the lineups, you know, in major events in this country, you would find them at that session,
Vangi's got a heavy brand. Big up Vangi for that.
So there's a lot of people that I met during that time, and I was not familiar with Joburg, for example, but because of that session, and then I got to interact with, you know, a few more people. But, you know, for me, it was a break from the kind of environment that I'm exposed to because of the 9 to 5. Right? So going out of town, literally, to go and attend a poetry session was necessary for my survival, basically.
Yeah, I understand what you said.
So I had to then, you know, put resources to that. It costs money to travel, you know, and things like those. But it was entertainment for me. At the same time, it was church.
Yeah. I get I like that metaphor of it is church. Like, I like that
because
I have the same vibe. Like, once you are I guess, and once you're a student of the arts, once you experience it, there's like, it's black and white. Like, you either for it or with it. And like, guys like yourself still, you know, could still manage the 9 to 5. People like myself, I couldn't. Like, I tried and I just couldn't. I failed. I tried twice in my 20s and I failed both times.
I'm still trying to get quite out spectacular.
Yes, Sven. Like, and in failing, I realize a lot of stuff about myself. And but anyway, it's not about me. So yeah, man. Like, okay. So now you understand. Like, there's this. There's this need, there's this creative bug, and it needs to produce. So it's medium, you know. You know the language, you know the medium. You sort of know how to develop with the medium. You understand the discipline between the spun and creative, which is big up and big up Matete for that, because like serious member are like you wanna, in fact you're probably the only cat that I can think of who I can off the top of my head who I can say like I consider as a full-on artist who still got a 9 to 5, because I know people that can't do that. Like in my experience, I know of off the top of my head at least two guys, and both of them are writers, and they were whack, brah, and they had money and they thought that they had money and resources and they thought they could still bring it to the table. But like, and you can, you know, in your span, you can feel, you can understand the effort and the work and but we'll get to the work. Salute. I wanna sort of like lead to the next question, because and this is where we're at. So we in this global pandemic now, and it's like it's flipped everything on its head, including our industry. So you coming from this background, eh? So you had to, my understanding in theory is that you know that the mediums, in other words the social media, the digital mediums, I would say probably I wouldn't use them as better, but you know it than other guys. So what was your, like, how did you develop or and this is such a big, broad question, so you can like start
anywhere. Yeah.
So I mean, like, between when was it? Like, today's actually 100 days of this thing, and like 100 days or let's say 101 days before that, and now, how did you
turn upside down?
Yeah, man. How did you? How was your hustle changed? It's a broad question, so like start
I get you. Look, the because of my physical location, I was forced to figure out a cheaper way than having to travel, because I didn't have the luxury of time, because I still have work, I still have other things that I need to do. So I need to be able to do art and, you know, to keep communication with the network as well at any time, you know. So thanks to the internet, that is possible. Sure. You know, so I was, it was not something that I, it was necessary for me to be able to keep touch. And then so traveling would be then for specific reasons, and you know, there would be more consideration for economic
of course, you know?
so that has always been then my primary mode of operation, to, you know, to keep my to keep the pulse, to test the pulse out there, to keep in touch with the world. So most of the marketing, most of the advertising, or most of the information that I share is through the social media platforms, you know. So I didn't have to change that. That has always been how I keep in touch, basically. So it's just that now, you know, the rest of the world has joined in,
and
you know, that has also, you know, started a lot of us to start examining how we interact with or how we you know, adapt to this
kind of environment.
So a lot more people are listening, and you know, what we are doing now has always been available, but we were not doing it. You know,
that's an interesting point. Now,
yeah, but now, because of the challenges that we experience, we realize, hey, you know, but then how do we then monetize it? That is still a question for a lot of us, because we do need to.
Let me actually come into the monetizing part now, because okay, so I think it's actually finished now, but previously National Arts Festival, now the Makanda or National Arts Festival, okay, so they've gone completely digital this year, so and they offered VR as or VR was one of the platforms in which they offered mostly the performance arts. So let's just, for the viewers, it was theater, and like the music, they only was operating with strings. They took away all the instruments you blow through, like the trumpets, your brass section, so just the string section.
Yeah, social market.
Yeah, man, and like it was, I found that is either that I was following as much as I could during the time. And they've stepped up the game. Facebook has so in other words, you could pay for tickets to online tickets and can go to like a VR or a virtual room or Zoom parties, like is another buzzword. And like what Facebook has now offered, like with live streaming, you can charge people. So I think the pandemic has sort of forced those platforms into that, which is interesting, and I'm very, very interested behind that. What I've also realized, which is the which is eventually how I, you know, put together the podcast, and big up Candace for that. The timing was 9:09 because I was thinking of it, and is creating a content, because now people are sourcing different content, and like just to give you a bit more insight into that point. So last week I was talking to these cats, comrades of mine from the US, about Black Lives Matter, and one of the reasons why they raised that Black Lives Matter became such a global pandemic that quickly and with that impact is because there was a shutdown of all sport and all other activities. All other content you could learn was what's going on in the world, and like it blew up. So from that perspective, that like everyone has focused now is sourcing the content online. There are platforms now where we can charge. Sure, we must understand them, and like it's not going to be as black and white as that. But like, I know you as a brother, because if you go on YouTube, and just for the listeners, you can check out Matete Mosoleri, Google him. His name will be on the podcast. Like, he's all over YouTube. You can check out his stuff there. Like, now you can, now those type of performances, if I must think of what's his gig in Durban, Poetry Africa. So now those live performances of yours, you can charge for it now. So, you know, I see the pandemic as kind of like, in a weird way, actually helping us.
Yeah, it's waking us up. That's why I say these things have always been there.
Do you, what do you, any opinions on that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's forcing the creativity out of everyone, because otherwise, it's sink or swim kind of situation. Because we don't know what's going to happen. But we're, one thing is for sure, we've unlocked the power of sharing content online. And I mean, it's fresh content, it's immediate content, you know, and that will remain, you know, we will not reverse from that, you know. And then, and also that element of how do I live off this in this kind of situation is forced upon us. We have to do it. There's just no other way. So
yeah, man.
In that sense, it is good, because it is unlocking that part, you know, in a very cruel way, I must add. But
yeah, the means, you know, capitalism is a nair, and like it'll always fuck you. And like I was looking at this as examples, and I want to talk to you about this, because let me just get to the point. In Denmark, there's cats that are using like a drive-through or drive-in concert. So you go with your car and the bras on stage, and you know, you stream the audio via Bluetooth on your device. I think that's sort of reinventing. I know in my hometown, drive-ins was a big part of Kimberley nostalgia from the 90s. I know I certainly grew up with it. So I think that's a very interesting way. I saw and the other point, what's this chick, Erica Badu. Saw an example of her. So it's herself, the DJ, and I think the guy, the beat maker, or the guy that's in charge of that, they were each like in this like plastic bubble, which could stream like,
like
visually that was
something was
heavy. So yeah. Given your demographic, Mebra, and given your art, have you thought of any, you know, wild ideas on how to creatively stream your performances?
I have not really. I have not. I am exposed to what everyone else is exposed to. And people like Erica Badu, for example, they've got that budget behind them.
that's actually another point I want to get into. But
So people have to understand that what.
Yeah,
what
I'm not putting you in the same bracket.
I get it.
we can't compete with that.
So people have to understand that what we, how far we've come, if anywhere, it is, you know, independently, and that takes a lot of effort.
That's a very good point.
You have to be everything to yourself. You have to be a team, and most of the time alone. Luckily, over time, you build relationships that turn into teams. That's what has happened for me. That because of my isolation as well, I had to seek out people that do the same thing or something similar to what I do, and you know, try to build a certain understanding artistically so that I can be able to work with them. and that has taken time, but you know, it's bearing fruit now because I'm able to continue creating even in this environment because the team is around me and it's a very small team. It doesn't take much effort to for example to record, you know, it's not top of the range instrument, but it's able to do the job and at a moment's notice. It's something that we can fit in the back seat of a car and that's it. So those kind of adaptations have always grown out of necessity, you know. Beautiful. That's why I'm saying it unlocks that kind of creativity out of us. So how do I survive in this environment, you know?
You know what, now I just wanna comment on a point that, which is what I'm trying to raise through all this type of awareness through this podcast, is to explain the dynamics of how the creative mind works, because you raise a very interesting point there. As most of the time you're on your own. Most of the time you have to source all of this on your own. And like I can, that's me all day, every day. And like so many others. And like I just would like people to understand like how dynamic it is, and just to give, man, like just give back to the arts, man, just to know like if people can listen to this, you know, any years or days or whatever, like, and just realize like, hey man, it's an effort, man. So when you expose to this art, you must appreciate it, man, because it's coming from a space
we put our soul in it, man.
So much sacrifice, man, like so much sacrifice, and like now we are forced to adapt, and like, yeah, sure, I use these in Western examples, but they are rather extreme. But like, I'm well aware of our limitations in terms of budget. And like, you know what, man, like Ishbra, like from whoever I know, like, I think we've done outstanding work given our...
Yeah, man, yeah, definitely.
Our limitations, you know. So with that point, man, so explain to me what projects and what are you working on right now?
Currently I'm working on music a lot these days. I spend some time preaching or trying to recruit people to do music with me. Because I wanted to, there were certain elements that I liked in certain people's artwork. And those are the people that I mostly interact with. I consume what they produce. And then I wanted to be a part of it, but I also wanted to weave what I do into their work. So I wanted them to influence what I do. So that concept of fitting Sipedi into different environments and trying to see how it will perform, how it will contribute, you know. So I've been working on music. There's a project that I've been working on for a while, and I've just lost some of that work, and I have to rebuild, which is what I'm doing currently, which is music. I've featured quite a lineup of other poets and musicians, people that I've interacted with along the way, people that have been touched by something unique in what they do.
Sure.
And I'm continuing to do that. Before this lockdown, I was, you know, recording with people all over the world through, you know, doing my recording, sending it over. They do their part, you know, we do that exchange. And through that, I was able to get a lot done. So the physical barrier, you know, I had to find a way to overcome it. And, you know, that is still how I function even now. I'm able to work with people anywhere, as long as we have that ability to send each other. Files and stuff. So yeah, so I'm releasing that music. It's a series of songs that are themed around a journey, because I looked back, and then I, over time, that's why even the musicians that I, or the artists that I feature, in this project is people that I've met. People
that through this journey. Yeah.
So I look at that as a journey. Everything as a journey. Life as a journey.
Sure.
The experience, the art experience that I've had as a journey, you know, and other people's stories, and you know, even fictitious stories as well, as a as part of you know, understanding the journey. So like every one of us is on that, on some type of journey. So the project is called Leadolaka, which is my journey in Sepedi. So it is songs that are themed around traveling. So far we've released two tracks. Last year October, at least the first one, which was sort of an introduction, and then the second track, it features Mansa Kunta from Lesotho, which is what that one came earlier this year. But not earlier. Well, it came now during this lockdown period. There are a couple more releases that I've got lined up. We've completed another track with a poet in Belgium, and that is on the cards soon. And as I say, I'm trying to rebuild on what I've lost.
Yes, my brother. Because, you know what, now, like you explained to this to me, now, I'm thinking like, Eshman, you know, we should host like, I don't know when, let's just for argument's sake, say end of August, just, you know, just to have a date. We should have like this massive like Zoom party, man, where, you know, where we have people from all over. Like I read like, you know this, brah, Rob Van Vieren. So the playwright. So he streamed one of his gigs, and now I would say about a month ago, he had like close to 47,000 people, and that's like bigger than most, or as big as some international sporting stadiums. So like that, you know, Eshman, that inspires me, man. To say like I think if we coordinate ourselves properly, us as artists, you could sit wherever, in whatever part of the world, through your device, we could tap into an audience of let's say 60,000 people for one gig, and they can be all paying, and I think it's doable right now. I think we can do that type of thing, man. And like actually I'm excited, bro. Like that's why I'm trying to talk to us. Like I spoke to a buddy of mine in the UK, Keenan Bailey, about what he's doing that side, and like very interesting, like what you're saying and what he said. And with my podcast, I'll interview other cats too. And like, yes, man, I think it's our time. Really do, man. I think it's our time. Like the world needs content, and like we got oodles of it.
We've got the platform where we own TV stations, bruh.
We are in terms of content from A to Z, we own that, man. And like you know, and I look at how like I'm running this whole gig through my laptop and my phone. You know, I'm just inspired by the fact that we now in a time where we can use simple devices like that, and we could run a podcast and touch people all over the world, man. It's in a way it excites me. It's also been it's been draining on me too. But
and it's easier to be resourceful in that way as an independent artist, because anyway you've been doing everything. I mean, you come up with a nail on the head. You come up with the marketing plan. You design the poster.
Everything.
You plan the event. You sell the tickets.
You still gotta do the art, man. And you gotta do the art. Like never mind. How big it is. Like there's cats I know in the States, man. Like they got people doing all of the above. All they do is pitch up at the gig, and they do their gig and they go home. We do everything, yeah. And we still have a party.
You do everything. Afterwards, you have to entertain the people that came to the show. They want to go and chill, and you know.
You know, man, that's why, man, I want to talk about these things, man, and I want to document it formally in, I've got a plan how in the future, like I just think they should understand our processes, our processes should be respected, and because I think we just work with so much, with so little, and you one of those brothers, my brother, and you know, like big ups. So just like in closing, man, let me just check it quickly. Yeah, definitely. Let's just say in closing, man, where can Mensa get hold of you? If they want your music, if they want your art, how do they access that? Where do they get hold of that?
Yeah man. I'm in most digital music stores. Just check for Matete Motsoaledi, Matete Motsoaledi, Matete Motsoaledi.
Sure.
So I'll be releasing more work through those platforms. And I'm on most social media platforms. I respond mostly on Facebook, Matete Motsoaledi, even there, or just Matete. And we're releasing a book soon. It's due this month. A book by Moses Siletisha, who is a Sepedi writer. So it's an adaptation of a screenplay. So it's another one of those. It links into the motivation behind what I do as well.
Sure.
You know, you took a screenplay, which is a different kind of writing, which is not very common in our indigenous languages.
Yeah, man.
And also translated from a different language into Sepedi. So the contextual issues and things like those, you know, they shine a light on how to maybe approach the language in those kind of situations. And the fact that it's done by a young writer, you know, it for me, it's important that we get such projects out.
Yeah,
his first project was a biography in Sepedi, and if you look at the number of biographies that are produced in Sepedi, it's very few. It's less than 10. That we know of, that I know of. And you know, those kind of things are worrying. We were talking about the 4 million people. I mean, 4 million people cannot produce much more than that.
You know what, my brother? You know, like you explained to this, man, I'm thinking, Ashman, we must have a follow-up on this, man. You know, where we can talk about the politics of how is possible that 4 million people could produce so little content, or at least commercially available, and the mediums that's available for us. So we're talking digital, basically. Because, my friend, like what I've been over the past, especially since this lockdown, I've already embraced technology, but I think as a creator, I've completely embraced it. And like I wanna talk to creators where we get rid of this taboo of like some Terminator bullshit of fucking some. let's just embrace it and own that space, because I think these people taught us to fear technology, but like it's right now, like I understand, it's our only friend, man. It's my only friend. And I wanna, like, in future episode, I wanna talk about cryptocurrency and how artists can monetize on that, because that's something I've been doing a lot of reading up about and research myself, and I think that's the future. You know, where we exist in this digital space, VR digital space, but we own it. And then you know, there's the real, if that's like a real word, but the actual physical space, and then there's that we've been owning for however long. But as like
Matete, creative people that created those kind of platforms.
You understand, man. You understand. So I think it's time for us to own our thing. But like with that point, my brother, thanks for everything, man. Like me, there's
a pleasure,
There's some drinks and partying here inside the house.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Like, and I've been. In fact, I'm glad I survived so long.
Man. It's that year.
I guess it's that year for that type of shit.
Start having a crisis.
But Stanley, man, like I think artists can handle any crisis in the world. Like we can be chaseip and we'll be alright. We'll still be able to handle. I was gonna say woman, but let me not go there yet. I think that'll kill. I think let's not go there. But Ish, my brother, in closing, let me do a follow up in a few weeks. I've got a few points I was thinking of as we're talking, with regards to the language, the demographics and the tech that's available around that, and into the performance space, because I'm thinking we could do like a multiple thing where we get say one or two, maybe three or four artists from like different genres, and just talk about like how we can monetize the performance art space, because that's something I'm very interested in. I'm experimenting with I'm experimenting with what do they call it, 360 VR photos. But like, let me just keep it hush there. It's coming soon. I'm trying to put my own. I want people to go into a Wesley Pepper gallery with like a click of a finger off the device at any time of the day, and they can buy my shit. Like, and I got a bra that can. Anyway, let me just nip the butt in there in due course.
And it makes sense.
And now's the time, man. And we must do that shit now. Like, as in like, 2020.
Thanks for the time, man.
Thank you, my brother.